So, we continue in English. We all know cloud, and we all know the benefits of cloud, and you don't have to make your fingers dirty on the computers. You can give it someone else, throw money at it, and problems will be solved. Fantastic. You can solve problems with money. Everyone likes it. But you know the same cloud is somebody else's computer? It has its drawbacks, and he's going to talk about. Imagine you're 17 years old and decide to make an own ISP because you're the first in your city. And this lays a path for the further life and for the further professional life. Applause.
Thank you so much for the kind introduction. I got goosebumps all over my back. So welcome to Why the Cloud is Evil, my, I hope, informed opinion and judgment of where we're heading with this. So, I'm Slink. I was born when the Unix epoch time still fit into 28 bits. Now you can take your laptops afterwards and find out when exactly that could have been. I know Linux for quite some time. I have a degree. It's not important, but I look at what's currently happening with another informed opinion. Like she said, I set up two ISPs and ran a third, which I didn't own. I would say everything I know, I learned from free and open source software. This is going to be a recurring theme in the next 40 minutes or so. And since 2009, I'm an independent developer and consultant. I'm a maintainer of the Varnish Cache proxy software, one of three, and I run a small company, which is deliberately small. So now for disclaimers. I'm not a journalist, and I'm particularly bad at collecting things. So I wish I had, for everything I mention, or which I'm going to mention, I had for everything some reference, some evidence. I don't have that. You will either be in a position to criticize me for not having this, or just take it as my opinion when in doubt. But this opinion is, I would hope, based on some real-world experience. I kind of made up my mind about the past 10 years or so. Do not expect any news. There will not be like the big reveal. Oh, we found out this one thing why the cloud is so evil. It's not going to happen. And please do your own research and prove me if I'm wrong. If you think that I'm talking bullshit, let me know. I really appreciate it. And we can also, I put this in the public domain. I'm going to publish the open document file. We can, if anyone's interested, we can continue using this as an open document. More context. I admire great technology. I'm a nerd. I love programming. I love computers. I am in awe about what the cloud people have created from a purely technical perspective. This is the old dream about resource sharing and fully automated provisioning. When I was little, quote unquote, there was this company called Sun Microsystems. They did something which already resembled the cloud. They had this idea that they could sell software to automate data center operations, basically. So, and then there's a big but. And this big but is what this talk is going to be about. First, I'm going to tell you what I would like you to know that the talk is not about, what it's about, and a bit of differentiation. So this talk is definitely not about people who use current technology for their own self-hosted projects. I don't rant about you if you work for a hosting company providing web space, or even if the company you're working for are themselves claiming to be a cloud provider. I am not talking about you if you run your own CDN, and in particular, if you honestly and seriously contribute to free and open source software, I'm absolutely not talking about you. So what is this talk about? I needed to find an acronym. This talk is about people who got cap swag. So what is cap swag? I guess it's this. Seriously, no, it's not. I just made this up with a bit of help. So, differentiation. Cloud, I would say there are people who, I guess, don't mind if people if people confuse some things, which I think should really be made clear not to be at all related. And this is how you run your software and who you pay to run your software. So who here runs their software using some semi-manual process? Like, you have your servers, they are installed, you have some shell scripts to async your application and data and stuff like that. Who does that? Okay. And who uses some fully automated way, like Ansible, Puppet, Kubernetes, Terraform, Sol, Chef, Helm? Yeah, about the same number, and I voted twice because I do both things. So I will not judge on one or the other being the same, one or the other being the right thing to do. I think it very much depends on how large your installation is, how much time you can, or like, let's say how often you need to change nitty-bitty things. Automation may be right for you, but I would warn you to be very aware of this one-size-fits-all dogmatism or dogma that I experience, at least personally, so often. Very small projects with just like 5 servers or so, fully automating all of their deployment process. I have some doubts about this. But anyway, that's only DevOps. This is not cloud. Next thing along this line. So it is technology which brings us the great features which are nowadays very often associated with cloud, like self-service, that's DevOps, resource pooling, that is Docker, Kubernetes, you name it, elasticity, scalability, kind of the same bucket, the same area, resilience, that systems self-heal by restarting services on different nodes and whatnot. So I think as long as good projects exist, which ideally should be free and open source, you can just use this technology to your advantage. This has nothing to do with how you run it. You do not need a service to benefit from this kind of technology. Fortunately, in a worse world, less of that would be open and you would need to pay for the software, but fortunately, much of it is still open and you can just use it. And please, let's not forget, it's trivial, but ultimately, no matter where you run your program, it is still the same. It should be, at least, we all know what happened recently. But your program doesn't change whether or not whether you run it on your laptop or some cloud instance. A word about cloud native. In my mind, this is just a dogma by the cloud native cartel computing foundation. And this is about scalable applications in dynamic environments. I'm basically abbreviating their README. Using container service meshes, microservices, immutable infrastructure, and declarative APIs. All of this you can have on your own install, you can have on your own bare metal. This has, despite the name, this has nothing to do with cloud, like cloud in the sense of buying a server or a service from some company, which then runs your stuff. They call it a private cloud if it's not a cloud by some big company. I would call this outside the cloud. But anyway, before we get into the real stuff, I would like to just get one myth out of the way, which I think is being repeated all over and over and over again, that cloud was somehow cheap. I did a real-world comparison for a reasonably large project, at least as far as I'm concerned. If someone needs 7 servers, that's for me, that's something. That's the hardware setup we looked at, or I looked at. You can see there's a couple of terabytes in this cluster. There's even more terabytes of storage, and we went the full. We went all the way to 5 management nodes. And then I compared this with like a ballpark figure on AWS. The big problem here is that a CPU that you own in hardware is not the same as the CPU you pay for on AWS. So I would still say that this comparison is in favor of AWS, despite the numbers. And the numbers are that if we calculated hosting the system at a nice local data center for 5 years, including all the energy costs, the rack space, the cooling, everything, network infrastructure, yada, 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 we would end up with roughly $8,500 a month. And for the same thing on AWS, that would be $50,000. Obviously, the $50,000 is dynamic. So if we'd not need that amount of power and storage, we'd obviously pay less. So it's dynamic cost, but it's a huge factor. When I talk to people, I very often say cloud promises to be 5 times cheaper when in fact it's 5 times more expensive. That's my experience. I have clients who are kind of ideal cloud candidates because they basically only use their service two afternoons a week, and still what they pay for infrastructure has dramatically increased when they went to the cloud. And then the cloud providers say, but labor costs. It's also easy. You can fire basically your whole IT department and let the project managers do all the administration. The reality is not. Running hardware and infrastructure is, at least in my mind, I know this, the perception has changed, but in my mind, running hardware and infrastructure is relatively easy. Running applications at scale is really hard. And that's something you still need to do. On cloud service offerings, you get some tools which may be nice and helpful, yes, but it doesn't help you if you don't understand your application. So when my clients decide to go to the cloud, to go to the cloud, they kind of seem to expect that people would suddenly have a lot of time for all the nice things. But no, they don't. They look after other things. And knowledge remains important. This is a recurring topic for me for years. I've been ranting about it in smaller circles for a long time. And just recently, this topic seems to be catching up. It seems to gain a little bit of traction. One of the famous advocates for questioning the cloud is David Heinemann Hansen, I think, DHH. He's the guy behind Ruby on Rails. I would say reasonably famous in the States. Their company, I don't know who actually wrote the text, but they have written a blog series about leaving the cloud and how much money they save. Another find from, I think, fairly recently is Ahrefs. Not what I would call a saint of a company. They do some SEO and online marketing stuff. And they say, okay, we save a lot of money by not even going to the cloud in the first place. So just to get this argument out of the way, that cloud was somehow cheap. That's all this was about. Now, the real thing I'm concerned about, design issues. I don't want to read all the bullet points. We're going to take them one by one. Centralization. As you heard in the introduction, I'm around for so long that I grew up with a dream of a decentralized internet. There was this saying that, oh yeah, it's so well designed, it would survive a nuclear war. And we had this idea, oh, we are going to have little ISPs all over the place, and we're all going to somehow collaborate and somehow be in competition with each other. And it worked for some time. And then the CapSpec came along and did this massive centralization and basically killed and still do kill a lot of smaller companies. I call them, excuse me, a perversion of the internet. This is not the internet. Having three companies dominate the market is not what I think is the internet. They are simply too big. Now, with this centralization, obviously comes a lot of monoculture, like planting trees. Everything gravitates towards being done in one way on one of the three, on one of three companies' services, or maybe two, or even all three. I see dogmatism everywhere. Anything which is not best practice is wrong. Anything which is not cloud native is wrong. Anything which is not whatever is wrong. There is this one way, and if you don't follow this one way, if you don't follow the church of cloud, then you're somehow the odd one out. I don't think that's a good idea. It's probably very efficient, because if we're all trained to do the same stuff the same way, we will be available to the marketplace. We will be exchangeable. It's very convenient. But is it the right thing? Is this sustainable? Is this resilient in any way? So just one link. Oh yeah, afterwards you will be able to see the slides, and then you can click on the stuff. I have just kept the texts of the links, not the links themselves. Google Cloud deleted a big client. This is the kind of thing which I would foresee to happen more often, that we see failures which are not like nice localized, but getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. Quick reminder about free open source software. I know opinions about the guy who said it at the time. Fine, you can have opinions, and let's just look at the words. There's this idea that free and open source software is important and that it has four important properties. the zeroths is you can run the program as you wish for any purpose. The first is you can study how the program works and change it so it does what you want. The second is you can redistribute it. Now that almost everything is kind of open source, in quotes, is not so much a thing anymore, but used to be at the time. And you can distribute copies of the modified version. In my mind, the internet and those cloud providers would not even exist without free and open source software. Virtually everything we use today is built on Linux, the BSDs, GNU, thousands of free and open source software projects. Now the CapsWags, in a simple model, what they do is they take this free and open source software and turn it into services, SaaS, software as a service. There's some detail about this and some nuance, but it's a broad simplification. So in this model, they use the same software doing the actual work, put layers and maybe more layers on top of it. So you as a paying customer can use the service that you have to pay for, but that's it. You don't have these additional freedoms anymore. If I buy a database instance from a cloud provider, I get SQL, I can connect to it and can run my application on it. What I cannot do is, for instance, something which I at one point needed to do, tell how a specific state in the database came about. Because for this, in the case of Postgres, which was the thing at the time, I would need to look at the actual data files. So that's just one example. So just to cut a long story short, to me this is the same as Windows 95. When we had Windows 95, 30 years ago, that was the state of the art. You could buy the software, you could run it and use it as intended, but nothing else. And that's about the time I grew up with Linux, so guess where this opinion comes from. So, to repeat, most of the software that the CapsWags built is on top of FOSS, but is not itself FOSS. When for instance, AWS claims that they would be so much open source, I like to ask, but where's the source code for your S3 implementation, or your application load balancer, or your whatever, your management system, your website? Where's the code for that? But they do great marketing. And in many cases, this really frustrates me massively. They brag about how performant their systems were and all that. But when you look at what's actually happening there, it's in many cases, yes, they do contribute and they have their own innovation. That's all good and well. But in many cases, they brag about things which were not their own contribution, but which were achieved by the Linux community, the BSD community, some application, some database system, whatever. And something else, which I find super, super frustrating, there is a process in the IETF. Again, the IETF is a different topic, but there's a process which overall I think is valuable, and that is that internet protocols and standards are being created collaboratively, that sounds wrong, sorry, you get what I mean, and with consensus. But now we've seen things like S3 and HTTP2, where someone innovated first and then basically let us, the rest of the world, swallow whatever the heck they came up with. That is also not how I think it should be. Let's talk about vendor lock-in. It's pretty obvious. The CapsWags promote high abstraction I presume because that's what they make the most money with. They promote serverless. I've heard cloudless, which I find a bit ridiculous. But the higher the abstraction, the more difficult it becomes to migrate. If you run your stuff on VM instances on some cloud provider, you're probably relatively free to leave almost any time. Once you have your stuff on, yeah, let's start with S3. I mean, it's still a simple API, it's still HTTP. It's not that bad a thing. But then you already need to copy the data off the thing. And once you have your stuff in Lambdas, I don't know if there's, I'm not informed, I must say, if there's even any way to seamlessly migrate this to another provider even. So many, again, that's Windows 95. You can't leave it. You're locked in. So many people, in my experience, seem to not understand what vendor lock-in really looks like, and they seem to kind of ignore it. Oh, it's not a big deal. Oh, but yeah, we have the knowledge, and oh, we are using that much open source, and we're only using open standards. And we don't need these special services. We don't use them. Let's talk about something super simple, at least from my perspective, and at least compared to the whole complexity of cloud computing. A CDN. I program the software which runs on CDNs, so that's something I can talk about. A CDN is basically a bunch of proxies. Yes, a lot of stuff going on top, but I would say it's something you should be able to migrate away from relatively easy. But someone recently posted some story where they were basically I can't find this word at the moment, I'm sorry. They were told that there was some issue with their data usage, and they were basically forced to either leave the CDN or pay $120K upfront within a day. That's at least the gist of it. So even for something simple as a CDN, it might be very difficult to migrate away from. Now, about you guys personally, what do you learn when you work with the cloud? I can tell you, I had my first Linux installation with round about the age 15, 16, I don't remember exactly. And I can tell you, and I learned a bit of VI even before that, when I was like 12 or so. I really, my memory fades. But what I can tell you is I'm still using the same VI commands today, right? So this is, and at the time I learned Bash and Perl and all these basics. This is something I use literally every single day. And my impression is that when you work with free and open source software, you learn how software and computers work. You can study this stuff. When you ask yourself, how does it even work, you can look at it. Yeah, it's super hard. You probably won't understand immediately how Postgres works if you look at the code for the first time. Contrary to that, but it's hard, but it gets you somewhere. This CAPSWAG knowledge, in my mind, is totally, in the long run, totally wasted on proprietary systems. You learn how to basically fill out an order form. Yeah? You go to Einwohnermeldeamt and fill out your form. That's basically what you do there. Windows 95. So, a bit along the same route, one step further, how do you want to work? With FOSS, my experience is you learn about it, you get run into trouble, you analyze the trouble, maybe you fix the trouble, you maybe work with others to fix the issue, or you eventually get good enough that you can fix it yourself. With CAPSWAG, you learn what the vendor wants you to learn. You might go to their conferences or read their fancy blogs, and they tell you, oh, you fill out this YAML form, and then you get this fantastic service. But if anything goes wrong, you're back to open a case. You're back to what I experienced at my time as a Sun Microsystems partner employee. You can't do anything. It's fucking closed source. And in this case, it's even worse. You can't even look at the binary. CapSpecs, or CapSpec marketing, I think, has a strong message telling you that they would empower you as engineers. And I can follow along to some degree, because compared to the old IT department boss who told everyone that you could only run databases on Oracle, that might be a step forward. But this is DevOps. Like we talked about in the beginning, this has nothing to do with buying services. This is about technology. This is about we run our computers. This is about the fact that, to some extent, we let the computers configure the computers, which is fine. The CapSpecs tell you that you don't need to understand the complicated detail. This is this low-code thing. This is this usability thing, yada, yada, yada. But, I mean, to those using these services, and we've seen in the beginning that some of you do you not feel sometimes kept stupid if you have to work with these things? I mean, I must say I do. This is why I'm talking about this, because it frustrates me. This is boring work. So if we're all going to end up being these form submitters and leave all the complicated stuff to the CapSpecs, how do we even control them? Where are the checks and balances? Their systems are closed. We cannot review them. What's going to happen with the whole industry? There's a lot of hidden complexity. Cloud services are not simple. They want you to have the impression that they were. They want you to make them, they want them to look simple, but they're super complex, and most of this complexity is hidden. So a word to the managers. I don't know if there are any managers here today, but if I'm lucky, one or the other manager will read or hear this. If you hire cloud engineers, who do you get? If you invest in cloud trainings, what kind of investment is this? In my mind, companies with this mindset that they only want these cloud engineers are gonna frustrate the real good engineers who still want to understand how things work. And on the long run, organizations are going to lose know-how, which means, in my mind, that they even, to a greater extent, submit themselves to these CapSpecs, to these global hyperscalers. And if we think one step further and replace in this mental model the organizations with states or super states, what's going to happen? Money. Money to managers. Money message to managers. The CapSpecs turn huge profits, but on the other hand, they need to massively over-provision their infrastructure to keep their promise of the endless resources. So how is this going to work? If you know what you need, why are you paying for someone else to over-provision what you currently need and make a great cut, as we've seen in the beginning? So the business model is simple. Buy and run computers, build more and more abstract layers. This costs a lot of money. Engineers are expensive. We all know this. Then sell the computer power for x-fold the cost and basically have a marketing message which tells people that they wouldn't need to know all this complicated stuff and leave it to them because they were somehow more reliable, more secure, more whatever. And third message to the managers, or maybe, second last. Do you really save on admins? For some deployments, maybe. But also the CAPS racks need a lot of custom knowledge. And just to name one example, instead of paying people to run systems, you're now paying people to optimize cloud builds, which I find a bit questionable. A word about flexibility and chaos, which kind of seem to be two sides of the same medal in my mind. So once you follow this idea that everyone can do everything on their own, and you just need the serverless deployments, and you just need to abstract everything through HTTP APIs, you end up with, I would say, and I've heard this from clients, a mess. If you imagine 1,000 Lambdas talking to each other, who is going to have at least a half-decent understanding of this? Also, another word to these managers, I've seen high fluctuation in many teams. Deployment configs change quickly. People leave, new people come. Who maintains the stuff? I've seen CDN layers being stacked upon each other because people don't touch the previous CDN layer and do it all in a new CDN layer. So more cloud to the rescue, buy another snake oil security product to keep it all under control. So, and then two slides on what I think is really the essence of this. I don't think running computers is so much more complicated. Yes, it is super complex, but really the basics, which we are told were so super hard, is to get them right is I think not that hard. I would tell the managers, hire some smart people and let them do their work, and then they will have the great minds to solve the other fucking shit really hard problem that you have. And if you only have the YAML monkeys, you will not have this solution. Today's servers are super reliable, and software is very fault tolerant, in my mind. So, this is a bit out of context, but I'm kind of done with the main message. I would like to mention some practical aspects. Many people think that I would hate the cloud. I'm actually a member of the Cloud Appreciation Society, and I have here the cloud selector, where you can select your favorite kind of cloud, like Contrail and Vigra. Those are criteria. I'm wrong. I'm bad at this. No, seriously. I think there's a good case to go to the cloud. And that good case is when really the advantages outweigh all the disadvantages, obviously. I don't want another dogma to replace a dogma. Let's use this stuff when it's good to use it, and when hopefully the disadvantages are not that important. And that's obviously the case when you need massive scalability, like 1000x. I think many people believe the application was so important that they needed massive scalability, but in fact they don't. When you run prototypes which need lots of resources, you can still use it for backup and redundancy, but never use just one cloud provider. And my big, big, big advice is put data into your own office space or wherever, on a safe place where you can keep the data in your hands. Hold the hard disks in your hands. So when your baseload is probably best handled by a friendly local hosting company, and the baseload, at least for many projects which I work with, is surprisingly constant, mostly due to the use of caching. If we don't change decision makers to change course, I think we will become totally dependent on a small number of companies. I think we will see too big to fail situations. I think we will see a knowledge inequality rise, and I fear we'll all be YAML monkeys. But to end with a positive note, I think we still have the chance to spend our limited time on Earth with interesting work, ideally on FOSS, and stay knowledgeable and competent to keep our sovereignty on all levels. I took a bit more time than I thought I would, but I wanted to have at least a few minutes for questions. So if you want to comment on anything or have a quick question, go ahead.
We have about 20 minutes time for Q&A.
Thank you for this absolutely amazing talk. It was enlightening to hear somebody speak my mind in this way. Thank you very much. Were you actually successful in getting a company that was committed firmly to the cloud to migrate to a cloud exit strategy in the past?
It's work in progress. I have not. No, seriously, I still have clients moving the other way. Let's see what happens. Not yet, sorry.
Hi, thanks for the talk. And do you think this is also about licenses? Because I think copyleft licenses would solve many of our problems. Like Apache and BSD licenses allow Amazon and co. to actually sell services without giving back and consuming all your customer base, which is still needed for open source software. What do you think about that?
I was really reluctant to put the AGPL topic in because that's basically the idea. The Faro GPL license is basically this idea that you cannot run a service on the software or you can only run a service on the software if you also publish the source code. I have some doubts I would think this would only lead to these companies using something else. Not entirely sure, but I wish there was a simple solution on the license level. And in fact, I did consider to publish stuff under AGPL, and then in the end did not, for reasons. It's complicated.
Okay. First of all, thanks for this interesting talk. You've addressed managers particularly. I just wanted to kind of give my point of view on this matter. I think actually many managers are aware of these risks you mentioned. I think there are really smart board members who kind of already figured this out. The main issue I see is actually more in the shareholders department, where basically they are afraid of committing to own IT departments. And that's why we all are ending up to some degree in the cloud, because it's, human resources are the most expensive resources, especially in like Western countries. And then it's like, well, let's go to the cloud, somebody else will figure out this problem. How do you see that aspect? Because I think the biggest problem is changing that. And if we manage to change that, I think we are back to actually talking about engineering principles instead of talking about finance engineering problems.
So first of all, congratulations on the smart managers. I'm not saying they are all... I know some really smart, good managers too. And I mean it. I'm not just saying it. I think this has a lot to do with this idea that we'd all be, to some extent, replaceable. I think management and shareholders are super afraid of being dependent on individuals or like small companies like mine. And they prefer to rather be dependent on a super large company. I like to work in a way where I like to be 100% reliable and loyal to my clients. If they trust me, I do not want to. I want them to be happy about trusting me. But I'm still a very small company, or my company is still very small. It is to some extent brave to say, okay, we trust these guys. It's from a manager perspective, I think, very easy. There's this old saying, no one ever got fired for buying IBM. And I think this is still this principle that people are afraid, people have an issue with trust, and they rather spend a lot of money on some paperwork than paying some good people. My argument is always that if people trust me, they still get all the open source results. So I would say it's far less risk if I give you all the code. You're in a much better position than if you buy a product from some cloud provider. But this is I think something which is not so easy to understand for many people. Because everyone else does it, right? I mean, they all buy from these people. They must be good. Yeah, sorry for the lengthy answer. I think we're at the end of our slot. Are we? Are we not?
We still have 15 minutes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, I must have somehow lost track of 15 minutes. I'm sorry.
So we have plenty of time for some more questions.
So with products like Redis, Terraform, and Elasticsearch, switching from an actual open source license to what they call a source available license, so business source license, do you see it as a way for companies to protect themselves from public cloud somehow? Or like, is it just a greed thing? Like, where do you think this is going?
I have not made my mind up about who the greedy company is in this in these scenarios. I mean, obviously, the bigger companies have found a super easy way to just fork and take these products under their own wings. But on the other hand, what's been the motivation to switch to a source available license in the first place? What's been missing? Like, has there not been enough money paid for support contracts, or I don't know. I'm not sure about this. I do not have a. I mean, I also worry about my own work and my own code. And I ask myself time and time again, is this business model the right business model? But I think it has a lot to do with what do you want from life. And if I say, okay, I'm reasonably wealthy and I have a decent life, what else do I need? And if I don't have shareholders in my back and venture capitalists in my back, I can find a reasonable way to make a good living from it. But on the other hand, if I want to achieve what I've just contrasted to, and if I somehow think that everyone owed me something just because I put out this great open source software, then yeah, I will probably run into these issues to think that a Libre license was the wrong way and that I needed some kind of force on my users. It's not my way. Everyone needs to find their own way. If I were Elasticsearch, it would have stayed FOSS, and I would have found a way to find enough sponsors.
Yeah, but sorry again, but I still think that's a license issue, because some licenses without copyleft are allowing enterprise organizations to take all without giving at least the source code back. And venture capital fueled companies like HashiCorp and things like that choose those licenses to get greater adoption, because enterprises take Apache license projects easier because of legal issues. They are afraid to giving back. And the thing is, they, companies like HashiCorp, choose those licenses to work around the legal departments of their customers. And if you choose something like the GPL, you might not get these enterprise customers in the first run, but you get a sustainable community.
Yes. I agree. That's exactly, I mean, we obviously, I think from, in my mind, it's clear that we obviously need both. And I think it needs to be decided on an individual level, on a per project level, which license is the best. Doesn't make sense to, maybe you have a big sponsor in the back who says, okay, but I'm going to pay you to make this development, but you need to put it under BSD2 clause. Yeah, but I mean, if they pay for it and you still make it open source, is that really the worse option than not making it open source in the first place? It's a similar thing like with the Faro GPL discussion. I'm really not sure if we can always point to the license and say, oh yeah, everyone needs to work with GPL only. I think if you run a project and you do not want certain things to happen, you should make a good choice of your license. Yes. But your situation is not the same as someone else's situation, and everyone needs to make their own decision. Ultimately, my message from today is, I think this is really not what it's all about. In my mind, what it's really all about is, where do we put our money? Because we buy these things, right? We buy these cloud services. And if we buy these cloud services, this is what we get. We get HashiCorp changing the license. We get Elastic changing the license. We get the whole Mongo story from a couple of years back. If we do not put our money there, I think we have greater, I think we have greater leverage through where we buy than what we tell people which license to choose, as long as it's open source, my opinion.
You just mentioned money, but in this room I feel like most people here are software engineers, and there's another really valuable resource we people have, and that's time. And something I like to bring up regarding to this, I think fundamentally it's down to decisions, like what kind of decisions do we take, like do we prefer open software or do we not care to some degree? And we have this choice. We have this choice when we pick employers. We have the choice when we decide with what kind of companies we work. We have the choice regarding what organizations we contribute to. And that choice, if we all, I think that's kind of what I take away from your talk, is make this choice a choice. Like, don't just use stuff, think about what you're doing. And if we make these choices consciously, I think we can change a lot.
Yes, thank you. And don't sign the fucking CLA, the Contributor License Agreement. If you make a contribution to a project, no matter what this project is, it's a bit of a different case with GNU. You see this recurring theme with me. I always see, okay, there's another aspect to it. But in the general case, if someone wants to take a contribution to their project, they should not take the copyright from you. Why should you give them your copyright? I mean, even if you make a contribution to a project under a license, you still wrote the stuff. It's still, you own the rights to it. Why should you waive all these rights? I mean, what do you gain? If you want to make your contribution to this project, you can still just fork it and have a patch set on top of it. It's a bit more maintenance burden, yes, but you still have this option.
I think we still have time for one question. Still time for a longer question, not a short one.
How would you, let's say, deal with not only managers, but also like financial people or salespeople who get hammered by software as a service companies with their super choices, and you have to work against that?
It's super frustrating. I mean, I'm in a situation where I work for an open source project, which is also the basis for a closed source project, which is distributed by another company. This is also this BSD license thing. And salespeople from this other company, which uses the same code that I write, call my clients and tell them, oh, you could use our commercial product. I am in this situation time and time again. I mean, I find my ways around it, and I try to cooperate and try to talk to sensible people to avoid this, because it's self-destructive, or it's super destructive. But it's hard. I mean, people kind of seem to gravitate towards promises of simple solutions. And I think everyone in this room knows that this is not how it works. We all know that this big sales promise can fall down because of a tiny little issue somewhere. And if you don't have the power to fix this thing, then it all falls down. That's my argument to my clients for open source software. It puts you in a position of power. You're not like the one having to ask some supplier to please implement this or that, and you don't need to force them with some contract to you must do this and that. You're in a position where if your partner A can't do this stuff, you probably find partner B who knows about it, or find some upstream or whatever to work on it. So my argument against these sales pitches is you get into a position of power where you can't just be overrun by some decision of the cloud provider's product team to just stop providing the service from one day to the other, or increase prices tenfold, or whatever. So basically the stuff I had on this slide about Cloudflare and the massive price increase.
So we still have 3 minutes for a short question. I go to that side. It's the first question from that side.
Thank you. I wanted to say just, you said if you host it yourself, you have to hire smart people who will then support your infrastructure but also solve other problems. I think actually this is difficult, to hire smart people. Especially if you're a small company, it's difficult to get good engineers. It takes a long time until you can hire them, and even if you have hired them, it takes a long until they can be productive. So I understand why this lures people to use cloud services or software as a service instead. I don't say it's good, but
I think on the slide where I said, okay, if you have a 1000x factor, either in this version or in the previous version, I had something also saying, or if you're really small. If I don't have it anymore, I apologize. Yeah, but really, yes, I see this point. There is a real benefit if you don't have a certain size. That's true, yes. But I don't think those are those are the teams that matter. In my mind, the teams that matter are really the big spenders on cloud builds, because the small ones, they can be in the free tiers, or they really take a lot of benefit from it compared to the risks.
Wonderful. As we said in our short conversation before, it's like a therapy session. And as a therapist, I say time's up. Thank you very much, Slink, for this fantastic talk.